sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
You talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining.
Well, no big Sacks and Jacks. I'm Tamal. Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 11. Down, wow. NASDAQ Futures down 49. We haven't seen any of that lately. We'll see if that holds. Probably not. Probably have some buy the dippers somewhere. That's what they do. Do we have Professor Carl?
Oh, you always have Professor Carl. Whenever you want him, which, you know, maybe is less often than he shows up.
Well, we have to rearrange on Thursday again, because evidently Lou is going to be on a plane someplace, so I think you get to your whole last hour like you normally would on Friday.
Well, you know, I have a suspicion that given the data that we've gotten recently, the PCE and... you know, some of the other reports that I talked about briefly on Friday and stuff, that it's going to be an interesting employment report.
Yeah, I think it is too. And it's, I don't know if you were had a chance to listen yesterday. Nancy was saying that in her area, there has been, as of now, other than a couple of divorces and things like that, there's been no real pressure for people to leave the homes that they've got the 3% interest rate in.
Right. Well, you know, I've actually got an article in Q on this in this area because, you know, every area is different, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know, there's that old saw that, you know, real estate is always local. It's true, but it's false, okay? It's not a lie. It is local in basically every case. But at the same time, the macro trends are, you know, are not really new, right? Not really one way or another. They do tend to have some, you know, some commonality to them. And around here, there's been a striking thing. I mean, we're in the middle of the summer, right? This is if you're going to move and you got kids, this is when you do it, right? Because, you know, the kids are out of school and stuff like this, right? So, I mean, if you have a choice, this would be... You know, and it is, you know, it is quote unquote. So who wants to buy a house in the middle of December? Well, not a lot of people, right?
Well, no, I mean it's sort of changing. This is just anecdotally because of the, you know, the people that do the stuff in the Southwest side, Audrey and Nancy.
Right.
I'm going to say the lion's share of Audrey's business. Is just not because she, you know, it just lands there. They're, the people that are trading houses are people that are older and trading down, trading up, trading something, and
right.
Amazing of them are cash deals. So, and there's not really a whole lot of kids involved. So
right.
She's actually busier this winter than she is this summer.
Oh, yeah, no, it's, I mean, you know, there's been quite a bit of a shift, right?
Yeah.
But around here, there's only one thing that is really happening at all, and that is the people who bought into, whether they had them built or whether they bought an existing one in the rental cabin stuff, and you know this is a tourist area, the market's flooded with that stuff at ridiculously overinflated, unrealistic on a forward basis. In terms of, you know, the numbers penciling out.
All that has to happen is a couple of them have to hit the bid, and the market's very vulnerable.
Well, that's right. And so, you know, I mean, these things are out there, but they're sitting. There's very few of them are moving, but they're on, but they're all over the place. And in the, you can actually, and every one of those places, you know, they all say, the listings all say, well, you know, these, this could be, you know, your forever home, whatever. No, it can't. There's no garage. There's no closet space.
Yeah.
There's these were.
Well, we used to live like that. You know, we don't anymore. Yeah.
Well, and then there's the other problem, which is you know, in the basement, there's a pool, which, oh, by the way, is like the last place you ever want that.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
In a house. But, you know, for a short-term cabin rental, maybe it adds a little bit to, you know, the kicker that you can get. And then at the same time, people are like, well, you know, these are still good investments. And I warned people during the crazy that what you were seeing in the weekly ask and those offers were getting lifted. They were getting hit. Is that you take everything within three states around here and close it down where you can't come in. And this is supply and demand. It's basic first semester economics class stuff. The price is going to shoot the moon. However, if you are buying today expecting this to be maintained, you have rocks in your head. And because this will end, I don't know when it will end, but this will end. And when it does, yeah, those people who would prefer to go to Asheville because they just like the environment there or whatever, you know, they're more hippie-ish than redneck or, you know, everybody's got their preference, right?
Where do you stand on that scale?
If I didn't like the hillbilly thing better than the hippie thing, I wouldn't live here. But, you know, Chief, here's the other thing that I always think is fascinating. You know, I have friends that come over here and and they stop in town and, you know, spend some time or whatever, and if there's one thing that they bitch about, and the local people too, is that we have a materially higher sales tax rate than pretty much everybody else. All right, Tennessee essentially funds their operations of the state via sales tax as opposed to all the other BS that most other states use. So, you know, typically what you can expect if you come here, vacation, whatever have you, is that you're going to pay a 10% sales tax. Okay. I mean, it varies a little bit with the local options and things like this, but that's about where it lands. And Florida was 6. Okay. But the thing is this, the property tax on a middle class house, even at today's inflated prices around here, was $1,000. Right, it's 5 in Florida.
Right. Yeah, well, here you get both. You get the property tax and the sales tax.
And the sales tax, right? Well, I mean, yeah.
But there's no, well, income tax is 5. Some places are, there's
well,
no income tax.
Well, here it's 0. Okay, and so, you know, and in Florida, okay. So I mean, this is a.
So
know,
where do they get their dough?
Well, where they get the dough is off the sales tax. But here's the thing. If you do the computation, if you just sit down the calculator, you got about a 4% difference. And the other thing is that our sales tax also applies to food where it doesn't in most states. Food at home.
So it's about as regressive as you can get it.
Well, now hold on a minute. Yeah, you think so? Except the property tax is arguably the most regressive tax there is. You and I can have a 2-hour long economic debate on this, but as far as I'm concerned, it is.
Well, let's put it this way: if it's done properly, which is a big statement,
the person
with the 3 times as expensive house allegedly should have more money, maybe doesn't, pays more. Than the guy with the 1/3 as big a house, and so it's minorly, it's not as regressive as a sales tax, where everybody goes out and buys the Alka-Seltzer and pays the same amount, whether you make $2 or $2 zillion.
Well, I understand that. The point that I'm making on this though is that if I just sit down with a calculator and I figure out what it is, you have to in order to cross the line where you pay a higher actual amount of tax, leaving aside the fact that an awful lot of other tax type expenses like the tags on your car and stuff like that are considerably cheaper here than they are in places like Florida. Leaving that out of it. And by the way, don't go to Kentucky because they have a personal property tax on the value of your vehicle every year to get the tags, which we don't.
They do that in Indiana too, I think.
Oh, they do it in a lot of states, but it's you know, it's that is ridiculously, I mean, that gets obscene in some places.
So you know, you can tell you're not from Chicago here. It's the sticker, not the tags.
Oh, no, I know about that one, yeah. Too. Oh, yes, I am from Chicago, and I used to have that effing thing on my car.
I know, but people from out of state call it tags, and no one will even, what's a tag?
Yeah, well, yeah, I know. But the thing is that when you look at all of this and you add it all up, you would have to blow, on a discretionary basis, almost $100,000 to cross the line where you're worse off paying the sales tax. Okay? Now, if you choose to do that, God love you.
Okay. Well, the reason why I'm you live there, I don't, so I certainly believe you, but I've run through once in a while, Carol, when it's like snowing in the wintertime, I got nothing to do. Some of the listeners will send me something, and I lose them, but there was one where they had every single state down in every tax that they imaginable they could throw at people. And it's right. Amazing how many of them came out sort of even in the end. I mean, there's some that are a lot higher. I mean, New York and Connecticut and Illinois probably, but California. But every one of them has one where to get you. Even Wyoming, where everybody goes, God, you go, there's no taxes. God, you don't
want to... Oh, yes, there is.
Yeah, you don't want to die there. If you die there, your state pays a huge amount.
Well, okay, except, so here's the thing. So you'd think so, but if you want to know why Wyoming, you know, Jackson Hole and that area, if you want to know why that area has turned into the enclave of the extremely wealthy, okay, stupendously wealthy, the reason is that they have a very odd... And you'll never navigate this one on your own successfully, so the lawyers make lots of money too. They have a very odd trust law that is very unique, and it is the reason that all those people put up those palatial things there, because they, but through its use, you can evade getting taxed on all of it when you pass it on to your next of kin.
Okay, but I'm saying on paper... You look at all this stuff, there's something to get you in every state. I mean, people here talk about going to Wisconsin. Wisconsin's income tax is way higher than here or something. I mean, somebody's got something.
But what you have to realize is that this is why all those, you know, the Wallet Hub stuff and when CNBC does their 10 best places to retire lists and things like this, every single time that I see one of those, I'm able to find where they are. That is nothing other than somebody's, Chamber of Commerce people out there bribing folks, because it's all BS. Every time it's garbage. And I can tell you from direct experience, you know, been here 5 years now, when I moved out of Florida and up here, my monthly nut, what you have to pay in order to be all right in a reasonably middle class lifestyle. I mean, I'm not an ostentatious kind of guy. I don't go, you know, running around in a, you know, in a Countach or whatever. But that monthly nut in terms of mandatory expense is about a third cheaper here than it is in Florida.
Well, what is there a difference? I mean, Kevin mentioned one day, I mean, he lives in Michigan, but he's very attuned to what goes on in Indiana because that's where Ivy Tech is.
Well, Michigan's terrible, but yeah.
But he says there's a definite, when you look at these difference of tax rates, okay, obviously.
Right.
If everybody gets all the same stuff... Somewhere along the line, you got to all pay the same stuff. I mean, there might be a little graph somewhere.
Do you think?
Well, yeah. I mean, he claims that in Indiana, this is a while ago when we first started doing the show. He claims Indiana just has a different view of things than Illinois. I mean, Illinois is
right.
If there's a, you know, a curve on the expressway that there's a couple accidents, they're going to put up some huge guardrails. Where in Indiana, they probably won't. You know, they might just say, just drive better or something. But, you know, he didn't make it sound to that extent. But so there definitely is a difference in attitude in how some of this stuff works.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, well, Minnesota ended up with a huge Minneapolis, but, you know, they gave welfare to everybody if you just showed up. So they ended up with a a massive black population where you wouldn't expect people to run up to Minnesota for the weather, right?
Right.
people have hit a lot of the state policies are different.
Well, you don't like 20 below zero, Chief?
No, but I'm not sure I like this 95 either every day.
Well, what I always think is so amusing, everybody these days, everyone is yelling about this.
Climate change.
Look, I grew up materially north of where I live today. Okay, so you'd think it'd be cooler. You'd be wrong. It was, in this time of year called summer, very commonly into the low and mid 90s, with stupendously high humidity levels, 70-80% humidity. You can cut the air with a butter knife. I grew up in a decidedly middle class house. There was no such thing as air conditioning in our house. Now, we had some considerably richer neighbors that did have it, but we did not. Not even window shakers.
We had a big honking window unit.
We did not have any of them.
Well, I had hay fever so bad. When I was a kid, I'd sneeze all the time, and my parents got tired of listening to me sneeze, so they bought a window unit.
Well, there you go. But I sneezed, and my parents did not buy a window unit, so I just got to tough it out. But you sleep on top of the sheets, and during the daytime, your air conditioner is the hose out back in the backyard.
Oh yeah.
And that was, I'm like, look, this kind of stuff is very cyclical. This year, I've got the data to back it up. Everyone yelling about it, but the truth is, the power bill does not lie. And in terms of the actual impact, because I haven't changed anything in my equipment in the last 2 years. The AC is not running anywhere near as often as it was last summer at this point. Now, that may change. I mean, we're now coming
into the summer. We got a phenomenon going up here that, it's when you talk about the records, we're chasing the records from 1954 was a real hot year, evidently.
Yeah.
But the thing of it is, in 1954, I know where we lived. Well, I don't know where we lived. I was 1 year old. But I know the size of the house. I know how many people live there, and I know there was no air and no ceiling fans.
Right.
But then again, people worked all day in the heat. Right. The average person was probably a minimum of 30 pounds lighter. You do get used to it.
Absolutely. But you know what? The choice to pack on the 30 pounds was yours.
What I'm saying is, if you're never in air conditioning, it doesn't bother you quite as much, but it still bothers you, obviously. The issue we're having right now is, I'm surprised it's not that hot during the day, for the summertime, but it's not getting cool at night, which is really weird.
Well, it's...
It's been so humid. I mean, they'll even tell you, it's going to be 73 tonight at the lakefront. I pile on the truck at 5:15 in the morning, it's already 82, and I'm 8 blocks from the lake.
I could just look at it because I've got the so-called smart house stuff, right? My front porch right now, it's 72.8 degrees with 93% humidity.
Yeah,
I was just up at the espresso machine pulling another coffee, and there's condensation on the outside of the windows. Duh, it's basically saturated, right? I mean, you could cut the air with a butter knife out there. But the thing is, I look at all of this and the way that the market, certain areas of the market are frozen right now, housing in particular around here. And then at the same time, you have these crazy asks. And the reason it's frozen is, of course, because there's a disagreement between the buyer and the seller, right? The seller thinks, I got this much in it. This is what I can get. And this is the revenue I'm going to, that I got last year or whatever have you. And the buyer says, you're out of your effing mind. Tonight, I can get a room in Gatlinburg at a decent place that doesn't have any dead hookers under the bed and no roaches. And it's $60. And it's the middle of high season. It's tourist season.
No roaches. What fun is that?
Well, I just, I can look up these prices on, because all the hotel sites, of course, it's all online now, right? I don't have to call them. And it, this, it's 4th of July week, for crying out loud.
Wow.
All right? And yet, now, of course, on that day and the night before, it's stupendously expensive because, duh, you know, supply and demand.
Oh, yeah.
But in the middle of the summer, when you'd think that the place would be crawling with tourists and, you know, and prices would be high, the pricing looks more like the middle of February when there's nobody here.
Well, the idea of the family vacation is, I mean, it's kind of gone the way the dodo bird sometimes.
Well, I think, now. Yeah, part of that. But the other thing, you know, Chief, this goes back to, I mean, you look at some of the stuff that's going on right now politically, okay? You know, there's the Votorama thing is, I don't know precisely when it ends, but...
it ends when the guy has the Last Amendment.
Well, there is some limit to it, but it's not, you know, it's called Votorama because in theory there isn't one, right? But I think what it comes down to is, because there's no time on it, the thing is you can only introduce something once. So everybody gets one crack at the apple kind of thing. You know, you get one bite and then it fails and then you can't come back with the same thing again. So there is an exhaustion.
What's that? We started the conversation with, you know, the real estate piece. There's an area here, well, there's a lot of areas here, but there's this area down south. It's an older neighborhood, Beverly. I lived there. I remodeled a couple houses there. My brother lived there forever. And it's this, you know, kind of Irish Catholic bastion. Although now it's very integrated. So it's, you know, but the beauty of it was, Carl, is all the houses were nice, you know, well taken care of the whole bit. But there were blacks that were like entry-level houses, where husband and wife, but you know, first kid on the way could buy a place, and it might have bathroom and a half and so forth. So when you got the second kid or third kid, you didn't have to remodel it because you'd sell that house to somebody else in your situation 3 years ago and buy a house on the next block with an extra bedroom and an extra bath. So you basically played piggy move-up. And, you know, the mortgage rates were pretty much stable. So the trade was, okay, I'm selling a house for $150, I'm buying for one for $165, and it's got an extra bathroom. Why do I need to put $20,000 in this place? I can just do that.
Right.
That whole...
That's gone.
That's totally gone, because you're trading at 3% to a 7 or 6.8.
Okay, but remember, Chief, you and everybody else, especially everyone in the real estate industry, was all in on the idea of essentially zero rates and flooding the system during the time of the crazy. And by God, we have to support everything. We cannot allow price to ever become a determinant. You look at what's going on. It's an article up this morning, you know, because there's this thing going on in D.C., and Elon is threatening, you know, by God, I'm going to start a new political party if this thing passes.
Well, you know what? We need a new political party.
Well, okay, but you know what? You know why he's doing it? Because in the bill, and this, I have now become convinced, this is the entire reason that he got in bed with Trump, and is the entire reason he wanted to do the Doji thing and all this other nonsense. In the bill are two clauses that have him literally spitting nails. The first one is no more subsidies for his cars and his solar systems, okay? And the second one is an excise tax if you are bringing those things in from China. You're not making them here in the United States. You're importing them from a place that is destroying the environment and exploiting slave labor in order to make them. So if you do that, that's fine, but you're going to pay the difference, hopefully enough, that there'd be the incentive to make those components here in the U.S., all right? Which, by the way, is exactly what policy should be, all right? You don't get to screw people as a business practice. Okay, so this is enough for him to threaten yesterday.
Don't think for a second that it might actually be a horse bleep bill.
I'm not saying there's 900 pages in there. I can find plenty of
the whole idea of the tax.
You know how many four letter words I could find within that I could find a reason to use reading that thing? Of course.
It's an extension of a massive tax decrease for rich people.
But here is the problem. Everybody loves it when you can force somebody else to pay your bar tab.
Well, sure.
And the minute that you do that, Chief, the minute you do it, you create employment.
Okay, my
upward pressure. And by the way, if you think that happening in one sector of the economy doesn't screw you because you're not in it, you're wrong.
I absolutely know. But my read on Musk, and this is I'm no shrinko, that's for sure. I think he's a little bit on the spectrum.
A little?
Okay, moderately. And when people get as much money as he has, you wonder the stop of the subsidy on his stuff. I mean, I was the first one to rag about how can the guy run in and Doge and try and save some money when his firm has got more money than he ever saved in Doge. They are kickbacks pretty much, right? Every time you bought a Ford pickup truck, you sent him a check.
He stole it.
I guess that is probably the best way to put it. But
it is the best way.
But I'm not so sure as an individual. He also dove into his Doge thing, and I didn't really agree with the way it was done, thinking that he was like kind of doing the right thing. Now, I'm talking about his mind. I mean, his mind's different, I think, than mine. But I wouldn't surprise me at all that he is actually somewhat pissed off that this bill basically unravels everything that he did in Doge and all that. I mean, the guy took massive heat on this, more than Trump, which is bizarre.
But, oh, yeah.
I mean, people are keying his cars, not Trump's. You know, I mean.
Well, but people are keying his cars because they, when you, all right. So look at, just as an example of the things that are supposedly horse bleep within this bill, okay? One of the things that is in there is to change the capacity for states to override federal policy on Medicaid, okay? Medicaid is, by law, for those people who do not have the ability to provide for their own medical care for whatever reason, right? Usually because you have no money, right? And oh, by the way, you have to be a citizen or a lawful permanent resident. Now, that is federal policy, and that's been federal policy since the program was put into force. All right? It is part and parcel of the law governing this thing. And it is a public, it is a federal-state partnership in a sense, in that there's block grant money that goes to the states, and then the states administer it. So what four states, California, New York, Michigan, and Massachusetts, all figured out that what they can do is game this. So what they did was they laid a tax on all medical provision within their state. It's called a provider tax. That tax, because of the way Medicaid computes the block grants, results in their state getting a larger amount of money from the federal government. And we're not talking about small amounts here either. We're talking about tens of billions of dollars per year that goes back into these states each as a result of the way that they do this. And then...
Ricky, as soon as Joel piles in, let me know.
Yeah, well, and then they went even further and more obscenely, and they spent those funds, after using them to game the Medicaid block grant features, they spent them in places that are actually prohibited.
What, I mean, why... We'll talk about more since we have a full hour on Thursday. Why do you run by the ridiculously low tax on corporations? Right now with the market where it is, the idea of somebody croaks of getting the stock to his kid, or these people who have this massive amounts of money, and no tax paid ever on the increase in the value of the stock. I mean, why do we run by that all the time? That's all okay?
Chief, can we stay with the fact that allowing me to go to the bar and drink single malt scotch at $40 a glass and force you to pay the bill, which is what this economy has become, all right? You want to argue over, that someone gets stepped up basis that's a problem. Okay, I'll agree with you. However, you could fix all of that. You could take all the cash from all the people. You could tax everybody beyond, say, $2 million in income at 100%, Now, of course, nobody would make.
I understand that.
$2 million in 1 cent.
What I'm saying is,
they go to the beach.
But
if you did that, you couldn't close the budget gap.
I get it. I mean, I'm okay with numbers as well. My point is, those kinds of unfairness lead you to a very stratified society. To me, it's not the numbers. It's the social thing.
Chief, it's not where the problem's coming from.
Wait. Whoa. The lady. Tells her name. I don't really give a crap what her name is. The lady which owns this, was it Las Vegas Sands or something and something? Mm-hmm. Where the old man croaked, and she gets the stock at $90 bazillion, and he bought it at $1. Now I'm not saying that I think the capital gains tax should be indexed. I would make this easier. She pays no taxes, and then sells some of it and buys Mark Cuban's team for $90 bazillion. This is now funny money. Nobody else gets funny money.
Okay, and you, nobody else gets the funny money. You mean?
But I don't. Do you?
I don't. But you know what? The person who just got the $100,000 hospital bill that they didn't have to pay and they shoved it up your backside. And by the way, that happens about 100 times. Every 15 minutes.
We could also go through the 100.
This chick did it once.
We also go. Okay, but what I'm saying is. If everything, what it's led us to, the people that can take advantage of this, the people that can borrow money for less than inflation, and Hal's always talking about, about we've turned into, and we can argue this all day long, but whoever argues with me is flat ass wrong. We've ended up in this very fascist economic system that 30 years ago none of us would have recognized. In every industry, there's two or three businesses with their nose firmly up the ass of government and now the president. And that's not America. But when people talk about,
But that's what it is. And you know what? And do you know what the strategy is? The strategy is you flood the zone to the point that if you try to stop it, everybody and their brother screams because their next door neighbor is the one who loses his job.
Well, what I'm saying is this is not, there's all kinds of bad things that happen when that stuff happens.
Absolutely.
But we don't seem to, but we seem to love it. I mean,
you seem to love it, Chief. Look at the stock market.
I don't love it at all, by the way.
Well, if you don't, I don't know.
I love it for the fact. Why do you think I have trailing puts all the time for my people?
Well, if you took care, if you stopped this just in the medical field by itself, the market would be down by 40% right now.
I'm with you. By the way, I have a very important question for you. We have, not that all the rest of them aren't, but I do have a market question. And if we don't, if we hear Joel.
By the way, Joel's on, so whenever you want to kick me off, that's fine.
Well, I'm going to leave you with this. I think Kenny will be on, but he might not be. Two things are running the market right now, in my opinion. One is the valuations are absolutely absurd. On a historical basis, both on revenue per share and some of the big stocks, not all stocks, by the way. Some stocks are relative buy, but nobody wants them. The other thing is Trump wants to drop interest rates 3%, which, by my estimation, would take a $3 trillion purchase by the Fed and bring the balance sheet right up to where it was before. And if that happens, the market's going to keep going because of the cash, and yet 2 or 3 years from now will be the Weimar Republic. One of those two things is going to happen. And if the money keeps pouring in, you don't want to be short this market. Yet if it doesn't, if somehow or another... they go back to some sort of a regular money supply thing, I think we're 30% too high. But I'm not going to sell anything here. I mean, I'll protect it, but I'm not going to sell it.
Yes, and as I pointed out, in a conversation I had with someone very close to me, I said, look, you buy insurance, which is what a put is, right?
Yep.
Which is what however you structure that insurance, you buy insurance and expect to lose the money.
We want to lose the money, sure. We got to go to Joel, or else he'll never call back. Joel, what's up, bud?
Well, what are puts?
what do you need those for?
You just sell puts.
Yeah, you just
right.
So puts are for sale. That's what you do. Why would anybody? We have, we got a lot of clients on our electronic platform. They've been selling puts for a while, and boy, they've been doing really well. And I'm sitting there going, good Lord, we make sure they don't. Well, to the extent you can, when it's an electronic platform, we keep an eye on everybody, but. That's a train. I mean, it's been a train for a while.
They're good until they're not.
Yeah. 1987 would say that.
Yep. Yeah, and you can also turn them into spreads too. I mean, you
don't have to. That spreads are for weenies. just sell them.
Just sell them.
Well, spreads limit your risk, right? Which is what I would always do for somebody. And all my people are like, we never sell anything naked. But spreads are for weenies, right?
Yeah, set it and forget it, right,
yeah.
Chief?
I mean, it's going up every day. Why not? You know, why wait for NVIDIA's stock to run up and you have to be right on the stock? Just it's trading 155 sells 120 puts. They're gold. Take the money and go.
This is not financial advice.
No, God, no. When I first started the business, when you start and you hear these stories from other people, as long as it doesn't affect your pocketbook, especially if you're younger, it's kind of one in and out the other, right? It's like you giving advice to your kid. I mean, it's, in one ear, out the other, right? Unless you got an unusual kid. All they talked about was the big problem in 1978. And I didn't know what the hell they were talking about because options only started in 73 and I wasn't here. So there were no indexes. There was no OEX. There was no SPX. There was no SPDR. I mean, if you traded the market, you essentially traded IBM. That was the bellwether. If you thought the market was going up, you bought IBM options or stock. I mean, you could have done Kodak or GM, but you know what I'm talking about, GE. But by and large, that was the one that was considered that would move, right? So IBM had never closed over $280 a share. This is before a lot of splits. So the story was, sell the 280s and buy a Mercedes. Literally, and guys would sit there and they'd go, if I sold like 30 of these things, I get the Mercedes. But if I want the next one up, I got to sell 35. And by the way, if I want the Blaupunk stereo, I better make it 36. I mean, the guys were doing that kind of math. And all of a sudden, and it was in March of 78 or April, I don't know, the 280s were down to, you could have bought them for a teeny, meaning you could have bought them for 6.25.
Yeah.
They were at 6.25. Everybody goes, we're not buying them. Screw those things. They always go out worthless. And I think they closed at $17 or something. And guys had sold them at like $2 or something. And let's just say there was a shot heard around the world if you were on the floor. Mercedes dealers had a bad month.
Don't be a weenie for a teeny.
Yeah, don't be. The idea of guys going and buying those in, it put you in the girly man category if you went and bought them in. I'm sitting there. I'm going. I can't sit here for 2 weeks and make a penny a day. I'm not going to do that. I just was never one of those guys. If I sold something for $5 and it's at a 16th or at 50 cents, I'm grabbing it. I mean, what bad could happen, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But we have clients that don't want to do that. But with clients, I can say, okay, why don't we buy this in? Let's buy the 205s in at 20 cents. Let's go out 2 weeks and sell the. The 215s at $2. Why do we want to be short something at 5 cents? And have it blow up in your face. You never forgive yourself, right? At least if you sell something at $2 and you buy it back at $3 and the stock's up 10, you don't feel so bad, do you?
Yeah, yeah. And free up a margin, free up a little margin too, right? For that, that must be something. But interesting market. I just don't know what to tell you, Chief. I mean, the market just keeps on going. I mean, we've talked about geopolitical events. We've talked about inflation. We've talked about interest rates and this mentality of the market is just. It's just unbelievable. I don't think I've seen it at a point. I mean, you always like to see new all-time highs, right? And right now, it's hard to call. It's hard to call a turn in the market. I mean, I guess the next catalyst you have coming up are some of the inflation data later in the month. But they seem to shrug off the a little bit worse inflation data last month. The Fed, I still don't think the Fed's doing anything in July. I mean, it's just a Goldilocks market. And
let me ask you, I guess it's sort of a political question, or maybe it's a, I don't know.
Can't be any more political than you and Carl. Right?
Well, but I mean, it's all getting amazingly political. And I, I don't really understand, other than we have a president who likes to insult everybody, which is obviously not my style. Powell is doing exactly what he wants him to do. He's pouring money into the system. Why is he all over the guy? And the other point is, by raising the money supply, we're up to about a last 2 months, we've got almost a 6% rate. You take the 2 months together, which is pretty friggin' high for a guy who's supposed to be fighting inflation, or tells you he is. I mean, it's incredibly inflationary given the growth we have, if we have any, right? And he actually has brought the T-bill rate down, because we do a lot of our people have money in T-bills. He's brought the T-bill rate down 90-day from over 5, like a year ago. It's down to like 4.19 or something. So he actually, even in the last 60 days, he's dropped that rate almost 20 basis points. So why is there such a reluctance to announce going from 4.5 to 4.25 when he's already done it? I'm kind of missing the announcement stage. And if you look at the numbers, he's doing exactly what Trump wants him to do, or at least he's blundering that he wants him to do. And yet he refuses to sort of admit it and just lower the damn things by a quarter. I don't get that. I mean, I understand they kind of are at loggerheads, and I wouldn't like being called stupid by anybody. And you know, and I don't care if he is the president, I'd have a problem with that. But what do you think is going on there?
I think that there's very few people that have your level of understanding of the markets, and you know, that includes a lot of people that are running our country, and they don't look at things in you know, the detailed view that you do. So with the only thing with Powell, I think it's just a natural flow of money. I don't think he is like being intentionally deceiving by what the policy is. I just think that's, you know, I think what has happened with the market is like the 30-year perspective, right, is no longer valid, and you just have to look to the shorter term rates, you know, the T-bills and the 10 years, to get an indication. I'll just stick with it. I just think rates need to stay where they are. I mean, unless we get a big dose of inflation, I don't think they, you know, need to go up. And I, way the economy is right now, the way things are going right now, I don't think they need to go lower either. I think stability in the interest rate market is the best thing for consumers, best thing for banks. And that's kind of what he's doing. I mean, I know you drill into the details with, you know, the money supply and stuff.
When did people? I mean, I'm going back a ways. I mean, this obviously, you know, is a big deal. And you know, in the 70s, we had a Fed. We had nothing but inflation. You know, through Nixon, and probably started with Johnson, but Nixon and Ford, and we had this inflation all the way through the place. And everybody supposedly couldn't understand what it was. It was oil, it was this, it was that. All kinds of crap. Let's blame it on the Arabs, let's do this and the other thing. There's a short little guy named Milton Friedman who was running around Washington saying, you are the idiots that are causing it. Look what you're doing to the money supply. It's going up 10% a month. No wonder inflation's going up 10% a month. Finally, Carter, through Volcker, understood what was going on, and they pulled back on it. Now, here we are, not that many years later, really, And we have, we don't seem to have an idea of, if you look at what's happening right now, when did the market start really, market was down the first part of this year, okay? Well,
yeah.
Since December, starting with the January numbers, we were going back almost not as bad, almost a COVID type increase in the money supply. It's pouring into the system, which exactly is going to cause prices to go up. It's exactly going to cause the market to go. Does anybody really think that they're a genius by buying Netflix at $1,100 and runs at $1,339? You'd be an idiot if this money supply went the other way. Why does nobody even mention it? It's an amazing turn here that happened in January this year. An amazing turn. We've now eclipsed the record money supply numbers of COVID. It caused the 40% price bubble that we're still dealing with, and we dropped it down from we were saying, okay, we got too much in there. April 2022 was the peak. Between April 2022 and let's say December of 2023, we actually dropped it by maybe 4% or something. But nobody wanted that. They want the market to go up and real estate values to go up. And all of a sudden, we started to go up, and now we're accelerating every month. And who's behind this, Joel? I mean, I know it's going to end up, even if they lie about it, 2, 3, 4 months from now, you're going to get 2 or 3 CPIs that are like over 1% a month. Then what happens? Are they going to jam back down on it, crash the market, and cause a big recession? What are they going to do? The only thing you can do is not cause it in the first place. And yet, they're doing it gleefully here.
Well, I guess you're not on the short list to replace Powell as head of the Fed.
Well, I mean, I don't really have a read of the guy, but let's talk about it next week. Buddy, you got anything good for the fourth?
No, just hanging out. Hoping for some good weather. Maybe get around to golfing with my nephew and just have a nice 3.5-day weekend. How do you like that, Chief?
Well, they're talking 95 here, so golf early.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
All right, bud.
Go Blue.
We say we go right to Kenny. Kenny, how are you, buddy?
Good. How are you?
All right. It's probably hotter here than in Florida.
I'm actually in New York City, but yeah, it's pretty warm here. And Florida is actually cooler than what's been going on here.
Well, Andrew was on the other day and said he's in Washington. He said New York was hotter than Washington, which never usually happens.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. How hot is it in Chicago?
We've been in the 90s, but as I mentioned earlier, it's kind of weird. It's not really dropping below 82 or 83 at night, which is weird.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I hear you. I think right now in Manhattan right now, it's like 77, it's almost 80 degrees, and it's only 8 o'clock in the morning.
Well, if anybody's never been to New York, if it's hot and the sun's piling down and the whole area is concrete, let's say it holds the heat well. And if you really want to get hot, when you think you're going to cool off, go down about 3 layers of subways, and the subway platform is going to be, what, 120 or so?
Yeah. Yeah, they've tried to air condition some of them, but the bulk of them are not. So yeah, it's very hot down there.
Because I mean, if in Chicago, which you know the subway system is nowhere near like New York, the subways, if you get on a subway, it's actually cool.
Yeah.
But in New York, the air conditioning is from the cars. I mean, if you don't, the basic air conditioning is you take the heat out of the air and you basically blow it outside, right? That's what air conditioning does.
Yeah.
Well,
right.
So when the car pulls in. And it's cool inside the 8-car train. That's it's a big, huge train. And it's blowing out at your feet. You're getting the heat. The people inside. So the first thing you want to do is hop in the car as fast as you can, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Talk about a strange world. Huh? You think as you go down, you'll be getting cooler, but you're not.
No, it's not at all. It's very hot down there. I was down there yesterday taking a train downtown to Wall Street, and it was hot.
It's even better when you're in a suit and tie.
Yeah, tell me about it. The only thing I had a jacket on, but I don't wear a tie anymore, so I didn't have a tie on, so that was a little bit better. But it is, I forget how hot it was now. I mean, I did it for 40 years, and I guess I was just used to it. But yesterday I went down there, like, holy crap!
Yeah, it's a trip. But so what do you make of this bill? What do you make of Musk? I mean, where in the spectrum? The market goes up every day, but not today so much. Money pouring into the system, and what do you make of all this?
Today's the first day of the new month and the new quarter, right? We had a rally into the end of the last quarter, so I'm not surprised, and I don't think anybody should be surprised if we see the market kind of retreat a little bit and back off, because now it's a new quarter. So we got three, portfolio managers have 3 months to perform, and I think I think it's a little bit ahead of itself, so a pullback wouldn't surprise me. Now, on the other hand, I think the big, beautiful bill is going to run into a little bit of a problem. I don't think it's going to get to its desk by July 4th. I just don't, based on what I'm hearing, I just don't see how it's going to get there. I think there's too much infighting. And so that'll cause some anxiety for the markets. Now, if I heard this morning that they're now resigned to the fact that it's not going to make it to the 4th. It's going to make it there, sometime mid-month. And so they're trying to prepare the markets for, A, the miss, but B, that it's still going to happen. It's just going to happen a little bit later because they don't necessarily want to see the markets go into a panic mode again. Because I do think if it doesn't pass, then I think stock's going to take a hit again, because then it'll have to price in you know, higher taxes and all the other things that are go along with it if it doesn't pass. And market will pull back.
But Kenny, when does the stuff that happened in 2016, when does that actually expire? It's not like August 1st or anything. I don't know the date. I should know the date.
No, I actually think it expires. I think it expires towards the end of the year or in the fall. I don't know the exact date either. But I don't think it expires. Like, if it doesn't pass, I don't think it expires.
No, it's not like it's, you know, next week or anything.
No, I don't think it hits next week. But the fact is, even if it hits by the end of the year, the fact is it'll be, I think it's retroactive. That's the point, right? Is that if it doesn't pass, whenever it does go into effect, I think it's retroactive to the beginning of the year.
Well, I mean, all the stuff was a lot of the tax decreases and everything were temporary. They had a sunset provision, and they're trying to get rid of the sunset provision.
I
wonder if we're going to make it. We're doing this at 3 a.m. the night before the sunset provision.
We've seen that before. Yeah. Right? We've seen it go right down to the 11th hour, and then they all come out and pat themselves on the back. But listen, the best thing that could happen here for the Democrats is that the GOP gets into arguments and it doesn't pass, and then the Democrats are going to go, look what the Republicans did. They raised your taxes by, you know, whatever, 60% or whatever the number is. I think it's going to be very anxious for the market if it appears that there's more of a problem than what there appears to be, right? I mean, look, everyone needs their back scratched, right? Everybody wants something out of this bill. On the Republican side, because that's what you're seeing. So let's see how it unfolds. But I'm betting against it's going to be there by July 4th.
I'm kind of with you on that. I think they got a problem back in the House.
Yeah, they're gonna. Well, because after it goes from the Senate, it's going to go back to the House.
Yeah, and I think what Musk is talking about, some of these senators that aren't up for election next year or even the year after, 2 years after, they don't give a crap. I mean,
right.
but the House people all do.
Right, for sure. It's the ones that are up for election.
But the House people all do. Because they're all up next November, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's why
there's this you know, panic running through. Because guys don't want to lose their jobs.
I don't think, from what I understand from a couple of people I know, Kenny, that actually were doing taxes back when the law changed, despite, you know, a lot of, shall we say, marketing that the middle class, every man would had a huge deduction on this bill, and a couple of the things in the bill did seem like it was. I know a couple of people were actually doing taxes for people, and said at the end of the day, it wasn't. You dropped some here and you went up some there, and you ended up in the same place.
Right.
So I don't think the median person actually saved a dime on this thing, or if they did, it was very little. So I don't know that they're going to say that if it doesn't pass, stuff's going to go way up. But I don't think it is, because I don't think it went down that much.
Now, well, let's see, because that's the threat that they keep telling everybody, that if it doesn't pass, that your taxes are going to go up by 60%, which doesn't really make sense to me.
No, I'm sure it doesn't. I mean, plus, I don't think it does, because, like I said, I don't think they ever came down so much. And I hear that from people who, when I was in my youth, Kenny, I used to do taxes. Remember when they used to send you to the big, huge form in the mail, like the 20-page form?
Yeah.
And, those days, everything you needed to know was in the form, right?
Right.
And, there's your deduction tables for sales tax, for gas tax, for everything else. And, I know people that can do it using the turbo and stuff, but it's way beyond my pay grade. But I don't think people saved near as much as the marketing was. And I think a lot of corporations saved, and from what... What's your read? I've heard that despite, the first Trump term was, they stopped all this crap about, money overseas getting a better rate.
Yeah.
I've heard people tell me that actually you can hide money overseas now easier than you could before. Is that true?
I don't know, because I don't hide any money overseas. But
now, wait, what are you, do you, is your account, are you a Liechtenstein or a Zurich guy?
I am. I am neither. I'm a Fidelity guy in Boston.
That's oh God! you're not in the Liechtenstein branch of Fidelity.
No, I'm not in the Caymans or in Liechtenstein or Zurich or wherever. No, I'm nowhere. I'm in Boston.
See, I could see you going over to Liechtenstein, going into the bank,
you know, making your huge deposit and buying a couple of black market pairs of false teeth for your friends in Florida, coming back here and getting arrested for avoiding the tariff.
Yeah.
that could happen. You know, all of a sudden, hey, this guy's not paying a tariff on these false choppers.
Yeah, these false choppers.
I didn't even know until... One thing I've learned from since Trump's been in office, I learned a lot. I didn't even realize that that's like their one export out of Liechtenstein.
What, is false teeth?
False teeth.
I had no idea. I just learned that today. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm sitting there going, I go, what the hell is he putting a tariff on Liechtenstein for? I didn't think the place did anything except have a few banks. How big is that joint? Is it about eight blocks?
I don't think it's very big.
Yeah, is it as big as Cook County? I don't think so.
I have no idea.
So I'm sitting there, what could these guys possibly export? So I look in there, what are Liechtenstein exports? It's false teeth.
That's so funny.
Talk about a tax on the old people, eh? So what do you make of this? I shouldn't do this, and I don't really like to do it on the air because people think it's a recommendation, but it's not. I was looking at Netflix. Kenny, I got those guys at like 50 times earnings and like 13 times revenue.
Yeah,
what the hell, over? I mean,
Netflix is not a name that I ever invested in.
Me neither. I don't think I've been in a client that's ever been in there either.
Yeah, so I watch it and I see it, but I don't pay any attention to it in terms of, you know, its stats and all that, just because I don't own it and I don't spend my time on it. I hear people talking about it, but it is what it is. I just don't own it, so I don't care.
Well, I mean, I looked at, you know, the other your Magnificent Seven.
Yeah.
Microsoft, out of all of them, I mean, I did this a few weeks ago. Their revenue per share is, anytime something gets over 10, I you know, my alarm bells go off, especially if it's a big company, because how the hell can you double if you're that big? They're really high. NVIDIA's real high, but Meta isn't really, and neither is Google. I mean, I think Microsoft has a more diverse, if I were to pick which company is going to be a juggernaut 20 years from now, I'd pick Microsoft over Meta.
I would too.
And I'm not so sure about Google. Who knows what happens to those guys? Because they seem to be in the antitrust hairs, at least in Europe and something.
Right.
You know, NVIDIA, I don't know. I mean, who knows if somebody else starts doing the same thing or can do it cheaper. I don't think they're a one-trick pony, but they might be a three-trick pony. But Microsoft, I don't understand how they could double. I mean, if they double, everybody in the country's got to work for them, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure that they double necessarily, but look, they're right in that space, right? They are right in the middle of the AI genics. Yeah. They're right there. So clearly, and that is the future, let's be honest. That's not going anywhere. That is the new industrial revolution, and we're still very much in the infancy stages of it.
Well, I mean, the cloud was the revolution 2 years ago, and then it was China before that. We go through these revolutions.
Correct. Right, but now we're in this AI, but I think this one's going to be, I think this one is going to be a very significant one. You can see how it's changing the world almost on a daily basis, right? In terms of how quick it changes and what these bots do and whether it's Grok or whether it's ChatGPT or Perplexity or whatever. They all have different, they all have kind of different themes,
but
right?
Kenny, what's the incremental, I mean, the internet, saved my lazy ass from buying the Wall Street Journal. All right,
yeah.
Or having to go downstairs in the Board of Trade and buy the book of charts every week, and and the next week you go buy the new chart. You know, it saved my lazy ass from doing it. God help you if you ever had to go to the library and actually do research. You don't have to do that anymore. But then it got fairly easy, and then as the Google showed up and you could actually go, they find stuff for you. It got a little easier again, and I don't really find. If I Google something and I put what's Kenny Pulcherry's golf score, and the AI thing on top tells me it's he's shooting 75, it's not that big of a deal for me to go down two lines to Wikipedia. It's incremental, but it's marginally incremental. I mean, it's nowhere near as incremental as not having gone down the street to the library. I mean, it's a little change, but plus I find it's wrong a lot.
Well, and it's funny because on my podcast yesterday, I had that conversation with a guy in the space, right, in the AI space, and we talked about these hallucinations that that these models have, right? Whether it's ChatGPT or Grok or whatever, and it's very interesting how he described it. He said because it almost convinces itself that the what it's telling you is true. Meanwhile, you and I both know it's not true, but that's just because of the way that they've been trained. And I go, well, that someone's training them wrong then. Because when they hallucinate and they give you incorrect information, it's wrong. He said, I know, but they're working on, you know, they're working on refining that because that's just the way it's going to kind of develop. I think that's what I mean. It's very much still in its infancy stages. So people have to be patient with it. But I think there's massive opportunity. So whether it's Microsoft or NVIDIA or Palantir or, you know, you can name a handful of them that are going to benefit. I think you have to be in the space.
Well, I'm not saying you don't. I'm talking about, you know, how incremental are we talking about? You know, how incremental is it really going to be? I mean, Crowell claims that what they're doing now is scraping the internet. So if they come across something wrong on the internet, they're just going to publish it. You know, I mean, they don't do the check.
They don't do fact checking.
Yeah, they're not doing the fact checking that we.
They're not doing fact checking, right? Which is a problem, right? Because then somebody reads it and they think it's true, and so in fact that is the problem, which is why you can't necessarily just say, oh yeah, I'm gonna type a ChatGPT and whatever the answer is, it must be right. It isn't necessarily right.
Well, whenever I Google something, obviously it comes up first.
Yeah.
And so I read it and I immediately drop down to see if it's legit.
Right. Right.
And also you can sort of tell by the level of detail there whether you can believe it or not. If there's not much detail. But well, Kenny, what do you think happens? I think we have a president that verbally does not understand the monetary system. Now maybe he does. I mean,
right.
He could, but I mean the iterations for Powell to drop interest rates like 3 points, my guess would be that would take at least $4 trillion on the balance sheet of stuff you had to go and buy.
Right.
And I can't even imagine what that would do to the CPI and what that would do to every man. I can't even.
Yeah.
But it would drive, and we're talking about somebody. You know, when I say this, it's not like I just, you know, being vindictive. The man's in real estate. And oh, by the way, he's doing business in the office. And I don't think the biggest Trump supporter could tell me he's not.
Right.
He's doing that is really good for his firm.
Right.
And for people around him that are the one percenters that own the stock and other stuff. It's good for asset owners. That's not good for the rest of the world necessarily.
Agreed.
Who's going to win this battle, I guess, is my point.
Well, it's going to be very interesting. Jay Powell's going to be out in May. So he really has less than 12 months, right? That's
yeah.
Number one. If he even makes it till May, because all the pressure that Trump is putting, Trump named a
investment. You got somebody in the background there, Ricky. You got to mute.
Then they kissed and made up. Then they feud over and forth. Then the stock.
Sorry, guys. 1 second.
All right.
While it's back on, folks.
There we go.
If Trump names a successor now, so whether it be Bessent or whoever it is, that person is going to be like a shadow Fed chair questioning everything that Jay Powell does. And so that's going to put even more pressure on Jay Powell to either do something or stick his feet in the ground and say, I'm not doing anything. I'm going to just keep it right here where it is.
But Kenny, you answer me. You're closest to the scene out there. Why is he pushing, or somebody is, maybe he doesn't even know what's happening. Why is the money supply growing so damn fast to where the federal 90-day treasury is actually the treasury is actually down 20-25 basis points in the last few months. He's already lowering the rates, and yet Trump's still giving him crap, and he's sort of resisting making the announcement. He's already done it.
Well, okay, but if that's the case, and I may agree with you, then how come someone like Scott Bessent doesn't stand up and say to Trump, hey, listen, sit down and shut up, because he's already doing that.
He's because he threatens everybody, and these guys are a bunch. Nobody has this kind of backbone. Nobody can stand up to the guy. He's hard to stand up to.
Right. Yeah, no, I guess. I mean, I guess you're right. But let's see what happens.
What do you got going for the 4th? You back to Florida or you staying in New York?
No, I'm actually back to Cape Cod because I'm up in the Cape for the month of July. So I'm actually jumping on the train tomorrow. I'm going back up to the Cape.
I assume it's a private car.
No, I'm taking the Amtrak from Stamford to Providence. Because I'm going to be up in Stamford tomorrow afternoon, and then I'll get a car from Providence to.
No, but why doesn't that Amtrak have a 1% private car in the back of the train?
I don't know. I'm taking the Acela, so I guess that's where the 1%ers sit.
Because, I mean, they up the one up in the north side, I don't have to run anymore. Before COVID, they always had the private car where the cool guys could sit in there in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. They used to have the train in the summertime that used to veer off from Providence and go to the Cape.
Really?
They don't do that anymore. Yeah, it stops in. If you want to go to the Cape, you can get as far either as Providence or Boston. You can't take the train any longer to the Cape. I think it's ridiculous.
There used to be a train that went all the way out on the Cape, wasn't there?
Yeah. There's a train bridge and everything that goes over the...
Is it abandoned?
But that train bridge now is just for cargo stuff, right? For containers and stuff. It's not for a passenger train.
I bet it would work for a passenger train.
Of course it would. It just, did. Of course it would.
All right, bud. Well, have a nice time.
What are you doing for the 4th?
You know, I'm not... Actually, you know what? I got to go to a funeral on Saturday.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So that's all a... And it's going to be a 95-degree funeral. That's... I'm looking forward to that, but I can't miss it. Terrific lady.
Another one
of these... had cancer, massive amounts of treatment for a year, and I'm not so sure she'd have lasted longer if they didn't do anything.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it was $1 million, you know.
I hear you. Listen, just so you know, my scan came back clean last week, so right now I'm good.
I can, you know what, Kenny? I could tell by the way you talk how much better you're feeling. you have no idea how much better you sounded 6 months ago.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. Six months ago, I'm nervous.
Yeah, you were, and you know what? We love you, bud. We can't be losing each other. It's not the way the world. At least not yet. One of these days, okay. But anyway, Kenny, thank you. And have a nice weekend. SP Futures down 17. NASDAQ Futures on 91. Take like a 30-second break and then bring back Professor Hill.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Low and Ropex, Stacks and Jacks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. SP Futures down 16. NASDAQ Futures down 85. Nothing really going. We do have gold up a bunch this morning. It was 2 days in a row on the gold, which is a little interesting. I'll give you the exact number there. We have gold is up like $35. Actually, $54 was up 35 when we came in. So they've had a big bounce off their lows. And, you know, I have a lot of clients that are long that. I'm a little bit miffed that I didn't pile on when it was down, but... Still, it's a good day. Could always be better, though, right? Hal, how are you, buddy?
Doing pretty good. Hey, Tom, about the funeral?
Yeah.
I think it's a lot better than an alternative situation where you could be attending it inside the casket.
Yeah. Well, you know, these are people that have been friends for a while.
The weather won't matter to you, right?
Yeah, I guess it won't. What's the nasty thing the Irish say? They're pulling them out of our pen now.
What was that?
They're pulling them out of our pen now.
Our pen?
If you're a sheep, all of a sudden you see him pulling out of your pen, you go, this isn't good. But
my grandpa was a sheep rancher at one point.
Well, interesting group. Lady was a... she was a daughter of some big engineering company that actually... did the whole thing in the massive sanitary and ship water treatment facility in McCook. They built that, their company, and that's where she met her husband. He was a foreman on the job, and it's a huge facility, and I think they were involved with Fluor was the company, and somehow or another somebody took somebody over and something and somebody got screwed anyway, but you know what usually happens in those things. But so she marries this guy. He's absolutely, well, talk about a life story. I love the guy. Whenever I get on there, we talk for like 4 hours. Imagine that. He was born in like the hills of Kentucky or someplace, or Tennessee, one of those spots. And the place he was born in is now part of a state park, the log cabin. And it was one of the cabins, originally was one of the two was one of the original cabins for the Hatfields and the McCoys from the feud. And that's why it's now in the state park. It was either it was either the Hatfields or the McCoys, one side or the other. Was, you know, and he grew up, he said he had no running water inside, and, you know, no inside plumbing or anything like that. And he became this serious engineer foreman guy that could put in, you know, water treatment plants, which is, you know, a hell of a move, but knows everybody. And one of his buddies, who died a few years ago, you know, and the buddy probably would have been 100, but they had a gun collection up in North Dakota or someplace that went all the way back to the Revolutionary War. They had front-end loaders, you know, we had to stick the bullet in the end of the bullet, the other end of the thing, and all the stuff worked, and every gun except one that was used in Dances with Wolves came from their collection.
Really?
Yeah. And then when the guy died, they took all the guns, took them to some Denver gun show, and I guess they sold everything. But I don't know how many pieces they had, you know, hundreds.
Wonder what they would have sold them for.
No idea. Yeah. I have no idea. And this is probably before COVID, so it had to be like 6-7 years ago. And somehow they, you know, nobody really wanted them. The guy lived up there, or the dad lived up there in a cabin by himself with all these guns. You know, how do you store them? You must have to keep a spot where they don't. Those old ones probably rusted, right?
I mean, where were they located at again?
Somewhere in North or South Dakota or someplace.
Oh, it's pretty arid up there, so it's not like living in Chicago or New York where it's pretty humid.
But I mean, I would love to have at least like seen those front end loaders. I don't know if I'd want to shoot one. What if the thing? Who knows what the metallurgy on that thing was 200 years ago? Where they'd like blow up in your face. But but they had, you know, all kinds of different Winchesters and, you know, Colts and all kinds of stuff.
That's probably when a time when things were, you know, I don't know, things made 150 years ago were made to last centuries, I think.
Yeah, except, well, but I mean, the metallurgy wasn't the same. I mean, I mean, there's no way, you know, a rifle barrel could, well, actually, as my uncle used to tell me, you could always get...
How long will the Brooklyn Bridge last? I mean...
Well, I think it'll last forever if you don't...
Yeah,
I mean,
it's an incredible piece of engineering.
If you, well, they also, in those days... They over-engineered everything.
Yeah.
Because they had... I mean, it's one of the interesting pieces when you know, I'm not a...
Yeah, they engineer things with the, you know, by minimizing the budget, perhaps.
Yeah,
right?
Well, that's true. But when you... the guys at Pullman used to tell me, when guys didn't have the computers, you know, you're going by slide rule, you always erred to the upside.
Yeah.
You know, because you... I mean, you know, remember they were putting one of the AFVs, but I was going on a request for that they were to take the crane in the PCW-1 from a 10-ton crane to a 15-ton crane or something, and they're talking about, you know, the controls in the you know those cranes that are like in a plant where they run along the rails and the crane runs up and down and then the one thing runs back and forth on the side of the piece of iron, well, steel, and I go, don't you have to replace the steel? And the guy goes, what are you talking about? The steel is probably good for 100 tons. But, you know, it was the controls and the lifting up that is. He said back when, you know, in the 40s and 50s, if you had a 1-ton crane, it was designed to take a 10-ton one-time lift without breaking. Mm. And you couldn't do it every day. Yeah. But now it got to the point where you had to be careful if you bought one now because it was a 2- or 3-time one-time lift. A big difference. And, but just... If you go to New York and you look at the bridges,
yeah,
there's a bridge that goes out to, is it Route 1? It's right next to the interstate. You take it out to Newark, right? You look at that thing, and you look at a bridge even in Chicago, and you go, damn, is that thing ugly? Because there's so much steel on it. I would say there's 3 times the steel you would need today, or you would use today. It's got to be so over-engineered. You know, it's incredible.
Yeah.
Because they didn't know. They just made stuff so strong, you know, it basically couldn't fall down. But they did have problems in areas like Tacoma Narrows. They didn't know much about wave harmonics because it was hard to do on a slide rule. Now, you know all about that. Most people don't. But when you...
Well, if you ever get a chance, walk across the Brooklyn Bridge.
I've driven across it a bunch of times.
My wife and my mother-in-law, we walked it, and it is impressive. Don't really understand how impressive that is until you walk it.
If you, I don't know if your wife's willing to do this, but have a guy like Dr. J, John Najarian, and a goofy brother like I have, talk you into biking over the Golden Gate. I go, okay, we'll do that. And that thing is up there. It is windy.
What's the span of that thing across the bay?
It's I'm going to say half a mile.
Wow.
But it's when you're on the bike, you're like even or higher than the rail. Mm. And you're going along, and I'm sitting there. You're not looking at the view. I just go, Tom, whenever you talk to yourself, you know you're in trouble. Keep your eyes straight ahead. Pedal at an even pace. Get the hell off this thing. Well, you know, the time.
Well, I'm from Idaho, so in Idaho we have these mountain passes, switchbacks.
And oh, yeah.
That stuff doesn't really scare me at all, but my mother-in-law, man, she does not like. My wife and my mother-in-law, they grew up in New York, you know. They don't like those mountain roads and those switchbacks. I mean, when I had my 1983 RX-7 in the Navy, that thing handled like it was on rails. I could do those corners like 60 miles an hour, and I get a little slide hitting that 25 mile an hour switchback. But maybe I should have been a race car driver because I love hitting those corners.
We're having the race in Chicago this week. You'd love racing here, and NASCAR races here this week.
Yeah. You know, I think I would like the F1 racing better. I mean, the oval track would be, I'd get kind of bored, I think, with that. I don't know.
Well, this is all over the street. This is a stock car street race. Yeah.
It's through the downtown.
Oh, yeah. It's all through Lakeshore Drive and a whole bit. So
oh, wow.
It's only out of the whole circuit, there's only two or three of these.
Yeah.
And the drivers love
NASCAR tracks. I don't know. I went to a NASCAR race and in Richmond, Virginia with my wife. We were dating at the time, or we were married, I think it was. Yeah. I don't know. I'd ask her what was going on. But yeah, it was just hour after hour of just doing a loop around a track.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And I just didn't see the point. I don't see how people can. I mean, I can understand if it was a horse race, right? I mean, you got to do three laps, but I don't know how many laps they did. 50? You know?
When we were very young, we used to go to a Raceway Park. It was like the last bastion of greaserdom. Remember when, like, what was the movie with. What's her name? When she was absolutely gorgeous. The one who died. Grease? Are we dressed like that?
Yeah.
Olivia Newton-John.
Yeah.
God, what a doll. I mean, and boy, can she sing. But she she died young, didn't she? Breast cancer or something?
I think so, yeah.
That's a shame, boy. But I mean, anyway, we'd go to this. It was a quarter-mile track, and you only went the one way. So the front right wheel would be pointed out at like a 30-degree angle. So you could make the corner faster. There was no reason to, because you only made a left turn, so you didn't need the wheel straight, right?
Well, if you were always turning into it, I think the wheels, the tires would wear out too quickly. Yeah.
But the car, the whole inside of the car was torn apart, and there was just a seat into the ground, and you had these big beams running across to protect the driver.
Yeah.
So the whole inside was like a metal cage, and there was you couldn't have put somebody else in there, your ass would have fallen right to the pavement.
Yeah. But I could see myself going to a drag race. That would be really cool. A drag race.
They used to have a couple of drag race tracks here. They don't anymore. It was Sunday at US 30 drag strip, you know, blah, blah, blah. My two buddies went there, and they said, I said, how was it? And he goes, well, it's really loud.
Yeah.
They had white T-shirts on. They were all kind of had those little black flecks on them and said all you did was breathe rubber the whole time you were there
because
you burned the hell out of the rubber just burned off.
Talking about the weather and drag racing, I read an article back when I was much younger about the number one pollutant in LA. It was flecks of rubber from the tires. The material from the rubber is flying around in the air.
I've heard that, Hey, so what, we've got a little bit of a pullback here today. The only people even understand what I'm talking about. When I talk money supply, like two or three people are on this show. I don't know where we've lost that knowledge, but what do you make of this? Pouring money in, we're going to get some. I can't believe we got a bad PCE number, because if talk about one, it's easy to screw with because nobody even knows the detail is. Are we going to get like a 1% CPI number here? One of these? I mean, I see stuff going up again like it was before, right?
Well, you know, the Chinese, I'm not sure what they're doing, but. They recently sold some serious treasury securities. I think in a given month we sell about $2 trillion. The treasury sells about $2 trillion, auctions them off, right? $2 trillion
between all of it, the 90-day or the 30-day all the way out.
Yeah, in a typical month, right? In the average month, they sell about.
You don't always do 10 and 30s every month, do you?
Yeah. No, no. I'm just saying in general, the value of the average treasury auction each month is probably $2 to $3 trillion, and the Chinese just sold like 0.8 trillion. So the treasury's got competition, and so I think the Fed's gonna have to buy a lot of these treasuries, and that's gonna have impacts. And you look at you mentioned earlier to Carl that, you know, if, you know, Powell wants to lower interest rates to make Trump happy, they'd have to buy a lot of treasuries, and that could, you know, I don't think they have to buy any I don't think they have to change interest rates. I don't think they have to. What am I trying to say here? They can lower the interest rate by just dictating it, by issuing an edict, and then they can buy and sell bonds on the open market.
I totally disagree.
You got to remember the monetary policy changed during the financial crisis, during October of 2008. They added a thing called interest on reserves, and the interest on reserves rate is right in the midpoint of the upper and lower limit of the Fed's target for the federal funds rate. So it acts as a price floor, like the minimum wage. And so all these excess reserves are like, I call them unemployed reserves. So in this,
well, they're M0. They're money that's in the system that gets kicked back to the Fed at night, which is actually one of the questions I want to ask you today. So keep going.
Yeah. So right now the Fed could just lower the rate, and now if they lower the rate, one of the problems with that is it's like lowering the height of the dam. When you lower the height of the dam, if you could lower the height of the Hoover Dam, water would come over the top, right? So the problem with lowering interest rates is it's like lowering the height of the dam. The water that's behind the dam could overtop the dam, and that's the money that's, you know, piled up in the banking system that we call reserves, or the Fed's balance sheet,
It's money that they've poured in the system that the system can't even absorb yet.
Yeah. So I don't think the Fed can literally lower the interest rate, because if they lower the interest rate, I think that money that's behind that dam would overtop it.
I think,
and come out as inflation.
I think that they can, like the European Central Bank did, and like they did during COVID. I mean, normally, if you pour money into the system, you're going to end up having you're going to give inflationary expectations are to the point where nobody's going to lend anybody 10-year money at 1% when you're pouring money into the system.
Yeah.
The only problem is anybody who so if the Fed just went out there and sold 10-year and 5-year and 2-year, they would have to pay a bigger price every time, which means the interest rates would have to go up to get you and I to buy the crap, right? Enter the Fed. They became the main buyer, and that's why the balance sheet went up. It's a totally screwed up way they did it. But I think they're emboldened now that they can do that again. Certainly the president is. But
well, I think most people are still in this mindset of pre-2008 where the Fed purchases securities to power up the economy lowering interest rates.
What do you mean they did that? They went from...
Or they sell to slow the economy to raise interest rates.
But they
don't really have to do that anymore. They just issue an edict. They're going to raise.
But somewhere behind there is you have to follow through.
Yeah.
I think Hal, you're absolutely right in the sense that the mechanism has been tricked up.
It's been rotated.
It's been doing something. At the end of the day, what has to happen is the Fed monitors. And I think we agree on this. They monitor the amount of money in the pool, right? And adjust it. That's their job, right? And if they say they don't say interest rates are going to be 4.5% as an edict. They say that is our target for the federal funds rate. And they say okay, banks I think are back to borrowing between each other at least a little bit. For a while they weren't doing it hardly at all, but what they do is they say if all of a sudden tonight Hal, who's the money manager at Citigroup, all of a sudden somebody takes a guy like Carl takes a $100 million check out of Citigroup and drops it off at Chase. now Citigroup might need a little reserves because they don't have them, and Chase might have some excess, right? So Citi's going to call Chase and they're going to say, I need $50 million overnight, and then there's going to be a number to that. It's going to be, you know, 4% annually, which means, you know, not much per night. And the so if the Fed wants to raise rates, they pull a little money out of the pool. So when you call the guy the next night, he's going to say, well, hell, last night it was 4.1, tonight it's 4.094 or something like that, right? And that's what they do. That's what they traditionally have done, correct?
Well, I'm trying to figure out what the Fed is doing right now, because if you look at...
So am I. That's what I'm asking you, basically.
But if you look at, you know, the CPI inflation rate, which I don't call inflation, it's just a percent change in the CPI, but we'll call it inflation. If you look at the CPI inflation rate and the PCE less food and energy, I mean, if you look at those inflation rates right before the election, they were kind of like, you know, the CPI was coming down, right? But the PCE was on the rise when they made that big move, that 50 basis point move, the month before the election. They dropped the federal funds rate 50 basis points right before the election. So that makes me think they're maybe looking at the CPI. But then since January 1st, since the 1st of January, you know, that CPI number's come way down. The PCE hasn't, and they've kept interest rates straight. So I'm not sure if they're even looking at those inflation rates. Then if you look at the M2 growth rate, year-over-year growth rate, it was screaming up. It went from minus 2 to 3 in about...
When was it minus 2?
Well, the number I got here, the M2 I got here, this, you got to remember, this is after that big bubble of M2 was created, right?
So you're talking about after. That's my point. M2 is now back up over the top with COVID.
Well, now it's at 4.5%, right?
No, it's higher than that. I mean, it'll take the last 2 months. It's pushing 6.
Well, year over year, if you're multiplying the month over month,
I got it as. Well, here's
Are you multiplying the month over month by 12, or are you looking at the year over year?
Yeah, I can figure that out. Yeah, I'm pretty good at that.
So I have the year over year at 4.5.
If you do 2 months and you multiply it by 6, you know, we got to drill down, bud.
But if you look at the M2 growth rate, it was soaring up, and yet the Fed did a 50 basis point cut a month before the election.
But here's the numbers.
But in January, from January on, M2 growth has hovered between 3.5 to 4.5.
Year over year.
January 1st.
Okay, I just did this 2 days ago, and knowing you'd be on. And again, this is COVID. This is not an antagonistic shot at anybody. These are just the numbers. From January 2017, Trump took office. And again, this is, I understand COVID was a thing in here, and anybody else would have done the same thing, probably. Foolishly, but probably would have done the same thing. January 2017 to January 2021, M2 is up 46% in 4 years. That's higher than Civil War. It's higher than World War II.
Yeah, about 10% a year, right?
Yeah, and make that 11. Between January 2021 and January 2025, the Biden years, even though it was going up when he came in, the total increase in M2 is 11%.
Yeah.
But most of it was in the first year, because it was actually...
Well, so you're taking a longer time horizon. I'm saying year-over-year percent changes.
But now Trump back in office, in the 4 months that have been counted, February, March, April, May, it's up 2% already. So that's at a 6% rate. Now, 6%, I'm not saying it's egregious, but it sure as hell isn't fighting inflation. It's expansionary, right?
Well, see, on the Federal Reserve's website, Fred, you can do month-over-month changes. You can
I use my calculator for that, but I hope we get to the same place.
But yeah, you can change the chart to year-over-year. And what I'm using is year-over-years. So a few months before, what was it, the beginning of 2024? Was it 2024? Yeah, I think it was. I have it as minus 2, and then it went to minus 1, then it's 0, and then 1, and then right before the election.
Hell, let me make this easy. Let me make this easier.
It hit 3, and then the Fed dropped the federal funds rate 50 basis points.
Okay, but let me make this easier. The COVID run-up topped up. This is an M2. This is money in circulation, okay, and whatever, checking accounts, all that kind of crap, savings accounts. April of 2022, and by the way, I'm doing exactly what you just said. I'm just using the chart.
Year over year.
April 2022, it topped out. And it ran down, really, until December of 2023, exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
But then as soon as December 2023 started, we started back up again at a pace at a pace very inflationary. And
yeah,
now the last
minus two,
months, that pace was like 5%, 4.6, like you're saying. But now as of December of last year, it's picked up again, and the rate is now well over 5. So during the last year of the Biden era, we had a 4-point-some percent rate, which is not fighting inflation. I don't care who the hell says it is. It isn't. And now Trump, in the Trump era so far, that's kicked up from 4-something, the high 4s, to well into the low or mid 5s, which is clearly not fighting inflation. And now we have peaked higher. Like you say, we dropped after the COVID peak. Now we are now higher than the COVID peak. So anybody thinks we're fighting inflation, I got another news. I got news for them.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out what the Fed's doing, because it doesn't look like they're looking at CPI. It doesn't look like
They're looking at it, but they're making sure it's low.
Yeah, and it doesn't look like they're looking at the M2 growth rate, because what I'm saying is M2 was screaming up. It was really accelerating, and they lowered the federal funds rate by 50 basis points right before the election.
Yeah.
Now it seems to have moderated a little bit. It rose from about 3.5 to 4.5 on a year-over-year basis, and they're not doing anything with interest rates.
Well,
if you look at the
CPI, think of it is, they are.
I don't think the Fed is looking at data. I honestly don't. I'm trying to figure out why they lowered the federal funds rate 50 basis points before the election, and they have done nothing since.
Well, the theme of kind of this morning's show, and we got to go to break here, is not necessarily the thing. What they say and what they do, somehow or another, is what I think what you're saying is not matching up. You're saying they haven't lowered rates. I'm saying, yeah, they have. The 30-year rate went from 5 to 4.2 in the last 4 months.
Is the Fed buying that, or is that just the market pushing it?
The Fed is the market. What they do. You and I can walk out and say we lost 40 pounds, and everybody look at it and say you look fatter than you were a month ago. I'm saying the announcement isn't there, but the actions are. Is what I'm trying to say.
Well, I think the market controls the longer term maturities, unless the Fed is directly buying those long term maturities. What the Fed really controls is that the anchor rate at zero maturity. That's what they really control. They control the yields, for the most part, at zero maturity. I don't think they really have much control over, 20, 30-year bonds.
Well, they unless they go out and buy them like they did during COVID.
I mean, I think they have some effect on a 20-year and a 30-year and a 10-year in a long-run view. Like, for example, if they're really easy for a decade, then I think the yields are going to be a lot lower than they would have been otherwise. So in that sense, they can affect long-term yields. But I think they have more control. They have, in terms of percentage, the percentage is going to be a lot higher on their control on a 30-day, a 60-day, or 90-day. They're going to have a lot more control on that yield.
What you're saying is they control...
They squeeze the short-term part of the yield curve. They squeeze it up toward the long-term yields, or they squeeze it down. The long-term yields are kind of moving mostly with what investors are thinking.
Look, the long-term yields are controlled by people's... It's a combination of the short-term plus how much people think the inflation is going to be. So if you pour money in the system...
And their expectation of whether the economy is going
to... If you pour money in the system... What you do is you lower the short-term rate, but if you scare people into thinking it's more inflation, then all of a sudden you actually make the long-term rate go up. Let's go to break. S&P futures down 21. NASDAQ futures down 110. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Al. Ricky on the board. S&P futures down 22. NASDAQ futures down 117. And this guy Hal's got me with so much stuff on my computer. I got M2. I've got rates. I've got Federal Reserve balance sheets. I'm trying to get my... why don't you do traffic, weather, sports, and I'll do the rest.
Absolutely.
I blame it all on Hal.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:41 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. We're looking at 72 degrees right now with a half 82, mostly sunny and less humid through the day. Tonight will be clear, but we will have increased humidity through the night with a low of 71 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 94 degrees right now with a half 114. Temperature near the record of 115. Thunderstorm around this morning as well. Tonight will be clear to partly cloudy and warm with a low of 88 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Iman Kennedy from Monroe's, 35 minutes. We're looking at 48 minutes. Iman Edens from Lane Cook. Iman Eisenhower from Wolf, another 45 minutes. Iman Den Ryan from 95th, 22 minutes. And lastly, inbound Stevenson from 24th to the Den Ryan, 52 minutes. Lastly, MLB. Yesterday, the Diamondbacks beat Giants 4-2. And today, we got Guardians at Cubs, 7:05 p.m. Giants at Diamondbacks at 8:40 p.m. And White Sox at Dodgers, 9:10 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
We have, we have SP futures up 23, NASDAQ futures down 23. NASDAQ futures down 120. So used to saying up. Pretty hard to all of a sudden... So euro rises after zone inflation hits ECB's 2% target. Boy, I don't know. DAX down 181.8%. FTSE down 25.3%. CAC around down 39.5%. FTSE's been pretty steady lately on the ups and downs of the other places. We have over in Asia, as soon as this thing wants it. Nikkei down 501. That's 1.2%. They've been up. Hang Seng down 211.9%. Shanghai up 13.4%. The... bonds. We have unchanged 10-year 4.22. Those rates were up yesterday. The bund up down 5 basis points, 2.54. Again, they're kind of back from the highs of yesterday. We've got foreign exchange. The dollar is down to, the euro is at 118. 2 weeks ago it was 115, and we come back with hell. We'll talk about a 2.5%, 3% move in a currency is a big deal. I mean, it's hard for anybody, if you've never done any currency stuff, it's a big deal. British pound up to 137. It was at 135 for a long time. We've got oil up 63 cents, 65.74, still back in his mid-60s after the run-up a couple weeks with the Iran situation to 77. Ran up 55 cents, 67.29. Natural gas down 7 cents, 337. Gold up 54 bucks. That's a big move. 33.62. Silver up 34 cents, 36.35. Copper up 7 cents, 5.10. And we've got Bitcoin... down in 1,100 bucks, 106,445. We already did traffic, weather, sports. Hey, Hal, when you're doing your trading, even if things are going your way, when I say going my way today, we have a lot of clients. Well, we got a lot of clients that are along the market, so it's not necessarily going their way. But We have a lot of people that have been along the metals for a while, and all of a sudden this year we've had a, let's say we were early, we'll never say we were wrong, but we were early in there, and all of a sudden this year we've had a really nice move, and they dropped down the other day, you know, whacked down pretty good after the tensions in the Middle East eased a little bit, and so we had the puts on, we rolled the puts down, so yesterday I'm thinking, this looks like it's got some legs to it. What can I do, like, really cheap for this Thursday? Because we're not trading Friday, and it's only half a day Thursday. So the GDX, which is the gold index, gold miners index, it's trading, like, 51.5. And I'm thinking, you know, just in case, why don't we buy, like, the 53.5 call spread for this Friday for, like, 4 cents? You know, just for laughs. I mean, just kind of a, you know, I think it's going that way. And, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll get 7 or 8 out of it. So we're 4 cent bid. Then I go, all right, let's pay 5. But we never get it, right? Another thing's 53.10, and I'm sitting there thinking, hell, I could have paid another penny. you cheap screw. Why didn't you pay another penny? I mean, it's still fine. I mean, we're long, but you always like to do better, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, we know one thing. The Fed's going to create inflation.
Yeah.
So I think that's the reason why the stock market is rising. So, you know, if you look at M2, like we talked about last week, we used the new numbers, and my quadratic trend is still in place, which means if very little changes, if that trend remains for the next year, M2 could be growing at 11% a year. Maybe they're looking at that. I don't know. I mean, it just doesn't seem like they're really looking at anything, which worries me. I don't think they're looking at the PCE all that much. I don't think they're looking at the CPI. I don't think they're looking at M2. So I'm not really sure what Powell's looking at. And to be honest, I don't know if there's really anything he can look at. I mean, this idea that a guy can centrally plan the economy from D.C. and meet every, 6 weeks, can make the right decision. The Fed's usually too late most of the time, right? In a year, we could be seeing a situation where we could look back at this point in time now and say, he should have raised interest rates, right? Or we could, in a year, look back at this time and say, well, he should have lowered interest rates. That's the problem with all this data. All this data is at least probably a month old. Some of the data is 4 months old, or 3 months old. And one data point, like an inflation rate from a month ago, right? That one data point doesn't tell you anything. It's the string of data points. And at any point in time, that trend could go up and it could go down. And forecasting is really difficult because all you got to do, going back to the weather analogy, the weather you guys were talking about, all you have to do to look at, understand how bad forecasting is look at the cone of the hurricane path. That cone, 5 days from today, can be 500 miles wide. And that's just 5 days, right? So forecasting is really difficult.
And
maybe that's why Powell's having such a hard time.
I'm gonna. That's why we like to joust.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take a different time horizon, and when I do, I'm going to sound like I'm totally disagreeing, but I'm not. I'm just taking a different time horizon.
Yeah, that's fine.
Let's say back in 2000. Now everybody's going, what the hell? It's 25 years ago. Well, you know. We remember, you and I. I mean, I surely do. I was trading. If you were to say,
I was in graduate school.
Okay, but and you were studying. Now, if you would have said, even Hal at the time, before he became the economic genius, if I was to say, we're going to basically bleep can all we learned in the 70s and 80s with the inflation in the 60s, and I'm going to grow the money supply at an average of 5% a year from 2000 to 2007, and the economy is going to grow by, let's say, 1.5 or 2, which might be being generous, actually. I would say, even if you're in grad school, if we sat down and we're going to say, oh, God, we're going to put some inflation in here. And if I were to say, if I was the instructor and I was the student at the time, I were to say, what is this going to do to things in 2007 and 2000 by that time? And we could pretty much have scribbled out asset prices doing this, markets doing this. We could have pretty much scribbled all that out. And then in 2007, 2008, if we nudge that number up to almost 8% for the next 12 years, I think we would be able to scribble out exactly what was going to happen. You know?
Yeah.
And especially if in the whole period of time you lie about this CPI number, and I'm going to say, if you were to take 2000 to, well, let's go before COVID, because everything kind of even got squirrelier after COVID. If you were to say, let's, because inflation does not, the thing that rags me about it all the time is it's never even. And Milton Friedman said that in class 100 times. It's not even. That's why it's so dangerous. Some people benefit.
Well, it's
some
not
people
even. Are, not at all.
And take the stupid example. If we all walked into the Fed, if you had a 20 in your pocket, you walked out with two 20s, guess what? You doubled the money in everybody's pocket, double the money in everybody's checking account. All you did was double prices, and if I owed Hal 20 bucks, I now owe him 40. You didn't do anything, right? It's like a stock split. But we don't do that. We inch it in some spots. Now, what we did was we said over that period of time that hospitalization, medical care is 6% of the basket. It was really 20% of the basket. So if we were to put the increases in medical care at 20% rather than 6, I think you would have had an inflation rate. You'd have added probably 1% to the inflation rate the whole period of time. So instead of being 2%, it would have been, say, 3, 2.8, something like that. If you go back to 2000 and put that inflation rate, I'm going to say, Hal, that we have not grown since 2000. If that went into your PCE deflator. So now all of a sudden, after 2007, 2008, it's been over that. It's been 6, 6.5, sometimes 8. And what you have now is you have massive moves in the stock market. You have massive moves in real estate. Somehow or another, people's wages have not done that, have they? Look at the health of people in terms of income versus prices today versus 2000, and clearly since 2008. Unless you're in some law firm and now is charging $1,500 an hour to God knows who, that none of us could possibly pay if we had any kind of legal problem. Unless you have those pockets, who else is, unless you're, and this is kind of leading into, and I'm not doozing because I really give a crap about how much they paid for a team. What does somebody who values the Los Angeles Lakers, this is not a sports thing. They value the thing at $10 billion, you know, and last year they made, you know, and they might have money going somewhere else, I don't know. The published income is $199 million. What do they see of the future that would put, in other words, how could you and I have made that presentation to a bunch of guys in suits and ladies in nice dresses saying, here's an outfit that made $199 million last year, you should pay $10 billion. When you do something like that, as I'm trying to educate somebody in my family to put together a thing for an industry that he's in, you got to go with the industry, who your competitors are. What would you and I have put in that presentation to make somebody say, man, this thing's worth $10 billion?
The Fed is an inflation machine.
It you would have to have something like that. You'd have to say that, you know, guess what?
And leverage is a powerful thing when the Fed's job is to create inflation.
Yeah, or
if you leverage a purchase 1% cash, you can get 500% returns in a year.
But when does that end? When does somebody, you know, because the worse it gets, the worse the crash is, if there is a crash.
The job of the Fed is to create 2% inflation a year. So people who leverage purchases with 1% cash, on average, they're going to do really well. Leads that those two dynamics, the Fed creating inflation and really rich people not using cash. Elon Musk didn't buy Twitter with cash. He cobbled up a bunch of loans to buy Twitter. He probably came in with very little cash. And when you cobble the Fed's job is to create inflation with leveraged purchases of these kinds of assets, you get, I think, $10 billion valuations.
But you can't, and you've brought this up before, and I'll say it for you, you and I can't do that. We can't do that.
We can't. We're out of that game.
There's no way you and I could. Can you imagine us having a credit line like this? Hell, you and I can't borrow at 15 or 20%. Suppose, you know, Hal might have this. He's a professor. Let's say you have a $10 billion credit line on your credit card.
Yeah.
There's no way.
I would have trouble making those payments.
Let's say if you're paying 20%, that's a $2 billion check every year. And if you're only making $200 million, that dog doesn't hunt, does it?
No, no.
Now, if we're borrowing at 1%, we can make that roll, right? Possibly.
And if inflation is really 5%, you're actually getting a negative 4% interest rate on that.
Yeah.
The bank is paying your interest for you.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so I mean, that's what happens. That's why you've seen this total.
It's three components. Inflation is underreported. The interest rate that they're leveraging at is under the inflation rate.
Right.
And they're only coming in with a very little cash.
Right.
And the Fed's job is to create inflation. Well, if you look at M2 over the time period we're talking about, it's almost up 500 or 400%. I think it's 420% since 2000.
Well,
the M2 is.
You ask, somebody might ask, well, how did this 2008 fiasco even happen? Yeah. And you and I might say, well, especially me coming from an era where interest rates were, 12%, 15%, the mortgages people were literally fighting over in 2007, 2008 were 6.5, maybe, weren't they, Hal? 6.75? Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there going, why are people getting acting like they took 12 Viagras over 6.75 rates, right? Yeah. I mean, what's the vig there? Well, you and I aren't big enough to borrow in Japan at 1%.
Yeah.
But if you and I put up $1 million, maybe we could have in 2008, and put up $1 million, and we borrowed 15 in Japan at 1%, and put them in some paper here at 6.5%, even you and I can make money doing that, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now we're sitting there going, our $1 million, what are we making now? We're making 5% on $10 million, which is what, $500,000 a year, and we only put $1 million into the thing. That sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Doesn't it sound like 50% return?
Yeah, yeah.
Hal, one thing I'll leave you: there's the best thing in the world is leverage. The worst thing in the world is leverage.
Yeah.
the question is your timing and how much, right?
Yeah, the worst thing is. Leverage, right? But those worst periods in time with the Fed's goal of 2% inflation annually for the last 100 plus years, there's going to be very rare times, I think, that leverage kind of fails, right? Because most of the time the Fed is inflating. So that's the key to the game here. The Fed's job is to create 2% inflation, and we all know that 2% inflation is really more like 4 or 5% inflation.
But it's the you know where to get the 2% from, Hal. And this is going back in. I mean, I'm a little older than you. Going back in, there was a period of time, but the 2% inflation, it's almost like a, God, it's gonna sound gross, but if you see a dead body, and you sit there going, if I could just get the heart going, okay, but the brain's not gonna tell the heart to pump, so how are you gonna get the heart going? If I just get the brain going, well, if the heart's not pumping, the brain's not going to do anything. If I could just get it pooping, well, wait a minute. If the heart's not going, you're not digesting anything, you don't need to poop. I mean, it's the economy, and I think you and I and a lot of the listeners understand, is almost like a human organism. It's either working or it's not. And back in the 50s and 60s, and I remember I was a little kid, but there was a time after World War II, the economy was growing. People were
in real terms,
in absolute real terms, probably growing 3-3.5% a year. And I know my dad died young, my mom remarried, and my stepfather and my mom bought this bungalow in Evergreen Park. Well, of course, even my stepfather did a good job. Typical male, he didn't read though. Well, my mom had enough for the down payment, so we get this place, and it's a 6% mortgage or whatever. And they're scraping to do it. Well, every year. He got a raise, and because anyone's got his MBA, so he's doing well. And I'm going to say the house went up. There probably was a 1.5 to 2% inflation a year, not much, We bought it at 18.5 in 1959, maybe, and we sold it in 1980 for 28, something like that. But you were never underwater on the place, so there was a little bit of positive curve to the inflation, just a little bit. And yeah. and my stepfather, you know, there was the inflation also hit people's incomes, right? So you essentially got paid more, and you were producing more. We were growing, and I'm going to say after 3 years, the mortgage payment was a half of one paycheck between him doing better, him growing, a little bit of and the house not. It was, and people look back at that and they say, 2% inflation is a really good number. Okay, but it stayed at 2.
Yeah.
And all kinds of other stuff good was happening at the same time. You can't just say, you know, drop into Yemen and say, if we can only get a 2% inflation here, things will be okay. No. All the other crap has to be there too, right? Yeah. The heart has to be working, the brain has to be working, the butthole's got to be working. Everything's got to be working or nothing's working. So to pull the 2% out, like I think you were trying to say before I rudely interrupted, is foolish if all the other stuff isn't working as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, am I right or not?
Yeah, I think so. I think the thing we have to look at is, what's the Fed looking at? I think the best thing that the Fed could do is create some kind of index that starts, say, in the year 2000, and then computes the annual inflation rate from where it is in the present relative to where it was in 2000. And then you can smooth out the bumps. It'd be like a long run average growth rate of M2, ignoring all the bumps, because that big, huge COVID bubble of M2.
I'm with you. But you got
really has messed up the metrics.
Well, we got to dash here, but you got to answer me one question. You constantly and me constantly, you a little more than me, always talk about what are they looking for, what should they be doing differently. What makes you think, and boy, I don't really want to hope this is the case, what makes you think they're doing exactly what somebody's telling them to do? And that's favoring the living bejesus out of certain people versus other people. What makes you think that the one percenter isn't right behind Hal, isn't right behind Trump, wasn't right behind Biden, and there's a group, whoever they are, and I don't think they're Democrats or Republicans, why would anybody have this policy unless somebody has a design to make the banks bigger? How could you possibly even imagine in 1975 that your inflation rate would be 12% and the banks are paying people 1.5%?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if it's intentional or unintentional, but does it really matter? Because it is what it is, right?
I think if it's intentional, it's much more difficult to deal with.
Yeah, as Carl would say, if it's intentional, then we got crimes to prosecute, right? But to me, it doesn't matter if it's intentional or not. It feels intentional that there are puppet masters. We need to cue the Master of Puppets by Metallica at this point. But it just feels like there are puppet masters that are manipulating the system, and maybe it's the constant revolving door between defense contractors and the Department of Defense.
Well, every time
Treasury, Fed, and Goldman Sachs, you know.
I was actually young and very naive at one point. I mean, yeah. You know, coming out of a Catholic school.
Get really cynical as you get older.
Every single time I see one of these crises.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, money moves from some people into other people's hands, and it seems like the same group wins and the same people lose. And it can't just be, if I flip a coin and 15 times in a row it comes up heads, you know what, not at my age now, I'm going to check the coin. I'm not just going to say, well, that could happen. No, it can't.
I opposed Wall Street getting bailed out in 2008 because I felt that guys like Michael Blurry, that were short in the system, they figured it out, and they got the short end of the stick.
Well,
he should have been owning Goldman Sachs at the end of that whole thing.
Right. Well, when you say Wall Street got bailed out, Lehman and Bear Stearns didn't. Some people in Wall Street got bailed out. It's always the who's and who, right?
They have to have an illusion of justice, right? So they have to have a sacrifice, right? And that was Lehman, right? They had to have
Bear Stearns.
To make it look like. Yeah, and Bear Stearns, yeah.
Anyway, S&P futures down 17.
That was
a sacrifice. Down 9. Are you in Carolina, or are you going back up to New York for the holiday?
I'm
going to
be in New York for a week next week for a college coaching, student mentoring conference where I'm going to get like a certificate. I'm going to be there for a week. I'm going to stay with my in-laws. I'm not going to stay at the the hotel. They would be upset with me if I stayed at a hotel.
Well, yeah, I mean, better food's probably better at the
I'll be riding the subway from Brooklyn into Manhattan.
Maybe you'll see Kenny on the subway.
Yeah, this nice heat and humidity.
Oh, God. All right, buddy, take care of yourself. Have a nice 4th. Right. Talk to you next Tuesday. SP Futures down 18. NASDAQ's down 91. Ricky, nice job. Won't see you on Friday, so you have a nice 4th as well. I'm back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.